What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
This is Cruise Radio.
Now more than ever, you should consider trip insurance for any kind of trip you take, not just cruises. Get a free quote at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida, this is Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio. Very happy to have you here. A review of Carnival Freedom this week, an 8-night Southern Caribbean voyage out of Port Miami. Kevin will be here a little later on in the program to talk all about it. Staff writer Richard Sims standing by with Cruise News. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Doug.
Carnival Cruise Line gave some updates this week.
Yeah, and they are updates that people have really been waiting to hear. If you've been following the news or if you spend time on message boards, things like that, you've certainly heard that there are staffing issues, not just with Carnival, it's with all of the cruise lines. It's become a real issue as, you know, the visa obtaining process for the various staff members has slowed down to a trickle, but it's starting to open up again. The whole situation is starting to ease. And John Heald, the ambassador for Carnival Cruise Line, took to his Facebook page and sort of wanted to give people an update on where things stand. And it was a lot of, you know, relatively good news. Basically, because the visa issues are lessening, they're starting to be able to get things up and running. Staffing is getting closer to normal, and they're hoping that within the next month or so, they'll be pretty darn close to, you know, where they want to be. That means that things like, for example, the chef's table, which was not being offered, bookings for that are open now on some sailings. I actually just booked it this week for a sailing I have at the end of August on Magic. They're hoping to have the 24/7 pizza back soon. Right now, pizza is available from 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. And, you know, that sounds totally reasonable. You're like, okay, that's pretty close to 24 hours. And it is reasonable. Until you come out of the casino at like 5 a.m. and desperately need something to eat. And yes, I've done that. So hopefully they'll have the 24-hour pizza back soon. In other news, Camp Ocean is open for vaccinated and unvaccinated kids from 2 to 5. The evening program, which is called Night Owls, isn't open yet, but like all these other things, they're hoping that once the staffing issues are resolved, they will be able to get that back up and running again. He also addressed testing because, you know, we've been hearing a lot of things about some lines doing some dropping of pre-cruise testing on certain sailings. And he basically said, don't count on that happening anytime soon and out of the United States. And largely that's because of the ports that they go to visit and the requirements that those ports have. Now, he did say that the higher-ups are working hard to get the testing mandate dropped. And, of course, that in and of itself is going to be kind of a big moment, and it's going to be a little bit of a controversial moment because there are people who are booking cruises now because they feel like, you know, it's a safe vacation alternative. Everybody on board is tested and blah, blah, blah. Once you drop that testing requirement, I have to assume that they will say to people, much like they did when they rolled out testing, you remember when they rolled out testing, they said, listen, if this is not for you, we understand, we'll let you cancel. You know, no big deal. No harm, no foul. I almost have to assume they'll do the same thing when they first drop testing, is that if somebody is uncomfortable with the idea of testing being dropped, they'll say, okay, yeah, you know, we'll give you a future cruise credit and let you sail. This is not confirmed. This is just me speculating. But given that there will probably be a fair number of people who feel that way, it seems, based on what they've done in the past, that that's the route they'd likely go.
But it'll also open the floodgates to people who actually, you know, they do want a cruise and they, you know, they're worried about testing or Walgreens not doing it for free anymore or spending all that money for a test for five or whatever, you know?
Definitely. Like everything, it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. There will be people, you know, you can't make an announcement in the cruise industry and not have, you know, half of the people thrilled with it and half of the people upset about it. It's just the way things go. In fact, I have a feeling our next story is going to be the same thing.
I was going to say, Disney upping the price a little bit.
Yeah. So Disney has followed in the footsteps of Carnival and Norwegian by raising their daily gratuity rate. I kind of love these stories because inevitably it sparks a lot of debate about whether gratuity should simply be rolled into the price of your cruise or even charged to guests at all. Like, should it just be something that, you know, the guests aren't even aware of? Because whenever you raise the gratuities, you get the people who say, why are we paying your employees' bill? That's your job. You know, my boss does not get to go to the readers of my website and say, you know, we're gonna charge you an extra $2.50 for the pleasure of coming here. Disney is increasing gratuities by about $1 a day for most guests. So the total will be $14.50 per person per day or $15.50 per person per day, depending on the type of stateroom you're staying in. And honestly, that's not a small amount of money. It doesn't sound like a lot, you know, $14.50. That doesn't sound like a lot. But when you add the words per guest per day, especially on a Disney cruise where you're probably traveling with your kids, that's four people in a room that each is paying $14.50 or $15.50 per person per day. So it does add up. And it's one of the reasons that I'm a big advocate of just roll it all in so that people don't even have to think about it. They know going in exactly what they're spending. What's interesting here is, usually when cruise lines do this, like when Carnival did it, they said, okay, listen, just so you know, we're going to raise the rates starting on X date. If you want to avoid paying the increase, pay it now and you won't, you know, you'll be grandfathered in with the old rate, basically. Disney did not do that. Disney's like, yeah, we're starting this now. Basically, if you have a Disney cruise booked, unless you have already paid the gratuities, you are going to be paying the new rate. Even if you decide to pay it tomorrow, because you just heard about it, you will be paying the new rate because they're not really, like I said, the only people grandfathered in are people who have already paid their rates before they heard this news.
With Disney, if you're paying $1,000 for a 3-night cruise per person out of Port Canaveral, you should probably have the gratuity wrapped up in there somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, we have seen cruise lines doing this. You know, Virgin Cruise Lines does it. Celebrity does it. Now, with Celebrity, you do have the option not to include it, but their basic package now is, you know, that things like Wi-Fi and drinks and your gratuities are included. And people really, really love having things included in the price. They like to have as much paid for when they pay off that trip as they possibly can. They don't want to get on board and have a whole bunch of other additional expenses. So, you know, inevitably we're going to hear the nickel and dime crowd saying all of these things about Disney raising the rates, but it's too late. You're already paying the new rate.
And a little bit of NCL news this week as well.
And both are basically good news. We've had some bad news from Norwegian, especially with the Norwegian Sun, which you'll recall a couple weeks ago, we reported that it had hit a growler. That's my new favorite word, by the way, growler, because we now know that a growler is a small chunk of ice. And it's just ever since I heard that, it's become my new favorite thing. Anyway, the Norwegian Sun hit a growler and it did some damage to the ship and they had to go back to Seattle and they had to cancel a couple of cruises, but they have, you know, they have repaired the ship. They used the underwater divers, which I kind of would love to see footage of. And they have done a test cruise to make sure that everything's, you know, tightly sealed and everything's, you know, nothing bad is going to happen. And they are now setting sail again this week. They'll finish up the Alaska season. And then after that, the Norwegian Sun will spend the winter going into the Canary Islands for the first time in 7 years. Meanwhile, this is, you know, sort of for you art lovers. They've been having this contest it's called Call to Artists. It was a collaboration with the Nader Museum in Miami, and they basically asked Southern Florida artists to submit artwork that would be considered for this gigantic mural on the outside of the terminal. And this year, an artist named Ernesto Cunde, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, K-U-N-D-E, and Ernesto Cunde won. And, you know, he'll get a whole bunch of prizes, but the real prize is you will be able to see his beautiful piece of art on the outside of the mural. And everybody who comes, it's impossible to be on a ship sailing in or out of this terminal and not see it. But he better enjoy it while it lasts, because interestingly, and you don't really hear this happening too often, every year they're going to reboot the contest. And so a new piece of art will go there every year, which is really unusual. Usually when you see a, you know, a giant mural like that being done, it's basically as close to a permanent exhibit as you're going to get. But this, every year, another artist will have an opportunity from the South Florida artist community to have their work displayed there and, you know, and get the publicity that goes along with it. And that's kind of cool.
And a doubleheader for MSC this week, kind of, I guess we'll say MSC Group, because one is their luxury line.
Right. The luxury line has now got 6 ships on order. They are going all in on luxury. This is thanks to the 2 new ships they just ordered, which are called the Explorer, Explora, E-X-P-L-O-R-A 5 and Explora 6. Appropriately enough, you know, as you can probably guess, the first ships are Explora 1, Explora 2. Yeah. They haven't even begun construction on these yet, but they signed what's known as a memorandum of agreement with Fincantieri Shipyard. So that's basically, you know, that's basically like placing your order. It's like going on Amazon and saying, hey, I'd like to order these 2 new, big, beautiful luxury ships. The new ships are expected to start sailing in 2027 and 2028, respectively. And they're going to feature a lot of new and developing technology that's specifically aimed at helping the company lower their environmental impact. One thing that's kind of cool is they're actually expanding the new ships by 19 meters. And this is so that they can fit in the new technology. Some of the technology takes up more space, you know, like whether it's the LNG or the hydrogen powered. And because they're doing that, you know, you don't just expand 19 feet in the engine room, it's or 19 meters. It's actually 19 meters altogether through the whole ship. So that means they're also going to have the opportunity to expand some of the public spaces, and they're going to expand their offering of suites across the ship, that kind of thing. So that's something that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how that plays out in the form of the actual design of the ship. I really enjoy, you know, looking at ship designs. The other thing that they announced was that the Seascape will have around 7,500 square feet dedicated to kids' spaces. They're going to have a lot of activities involving Lego. Those are sort of designed for kids who are between 3 and 6. And there's another separate Lego area with, you know, the more traditional Lego blocks that's for kids like 7 to 11. They're also going to have 3 different areas for the tween set to hang out in. And those seem sort of like what you're used to seeing on other ships, except on other ships where they tend to be clustered into one space, these will be 3 separate spaces.
Listener question this week comes from Heather. Heather says, we're going to Bermuda this summer and keep reading that we need a health passport to even get off the ship in Bermuda. Is this something that we should take care of before we cruise, or does the cruise line satisfy this for us?
So this is something that you have to take care of yourself. There probably are some individual small cruise lines, things like that, that will take care of this for you. But in my experience, and I happen to be doing this right now for an upcoming cruise, it is something that you have to take care of yourself. It's also something that you have to do whether you're planning to get off the ship in Bermuda or not. A lot of people say, oh, I've been to Bermuda 1,000 times, I'm going to just hang out on the ship. Doesn't matter. You still have to fill out the paperwork and you still have to pay the fee. It's a $40 fee per person, and that does not go to the cruise line. That is going to Bermuda. So it's pretty easy to do. In fact, for example, with my upcoming Carnival sailing, they sent me an email reminding me that this has to be done, and it had a link, and I went to the link, and you go down and you select which sailing you're going to be on. This usually populates about a month before you sail. The cruise lines tell you that you should start doing this, you know, like 6 to 8 weeks before, but in my experience, I've only seen it available a month in advance. And it's pretty simple. You fill out the paperwork and you have to upload your vaccination records, that kind of thing. And then they email you back and they tell you you've been accepted. It's a $40 fee. I don't know what happens if you hear back from them and they say, nope, sorry, you did not get the travel advisory permission. I assume that would mean that maybe you can't board the ship. That is something we'll have to actually look into. I haven't heard of anyone being rejected, but it is worth, you know, kind of pondering. If you happen to be somebody who was rejected, drop Doug a line, because I'd be interested to hear what happens next.
All right. Staff writer Richard Sims. Richard, thank you so much, buddy.
Always glad to be here.
Breaking news as it happens. Online and on demand at cruiseradio.net.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
You're listening to Cruise Radio, the trusted voice of the cruise industry.
Kevin, his wife, and their almost two-year-old just went on a 8-night cruise down to the Southern Caribbean on Carnival Freedom. They left out of Port Miami and it hit Half Moon Cay, Grand Turk, Aruba, Bonaire, and 3 days at sea. Kevin, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Good, bud. So you're up in the Northwest and you had to get down to Miami, where Carnival Freedom was based at the time. So what made you want to take this 8-night cruise to the Southern Caribbean?
So we usually try and get a nice cruise over spring break, since my wife is in the education field and spring break's a natural time to have some good time off. And the itinerary looked really appealing, included a couple new ports for us that we hadn't been to. And yeah, wanted to make sure we got the B part of the ABC islands. So
traveling with the little one, do you fly in early?
Yeah, you kind of have to, and especially coming from so far. And we, unfortunately for this time and the way the itinerary worked, we could only really come in just the day before, but we did fly in the afternoon before the cruise.
You make your way to Port Miami. Earlier this year, Carnival rolled out VeriFly, which is an online system to satisfy all your vaccine paperwork and such. Were they using it at Carnival Freedom that day?
We did. So it works like a charm for my wife and I, because we're both, you know, fully vaccinated and, you know, had our tests and everything done. But for my son, though, who's under two and, at the time of the cruise, you know, can't get vaccinated. But also Carnival did not at that time require a, you know, COVID test for him at all. And so VeriFly itself really didn't work, or, you know, able to complete the process for him.
You make your way on board Carnival Freedom. What were your impressions of the ship? Because you've sailed Freedom before, right?
I did. So my wife and I sailed it back, I think it was in 2019, when it was actually in Galveston at the time. So pre-COVID, everything, obviously. And it is a nice ship. So it went through some renovations, I think, back in, you know, 2018, 2019, just a, you know, simple dry dock, I think, at that time and everything. But, you know, it's kept up well. I mean, it's definitely not the newest and greatest, like, you know, the Vista class or even Mardi Gras, things like that. But, you know, it's still a decent ship for a nice vacation.
What type of stateroom did you book for this 8-night cruise?
Yeah, so we had an ocean suite that was located on deck 7. You know, traveling with the little guy, we wanted to have some extra space, you know, to be able to, you know, have his crib in there and maneuver around and live in. And you know, because you do spend more time in the stateroom with a little guy than you would, you know, probably with just my wife and I.
Where was the room in terms of location?
So it's in the front of the ship, so front right, basically, so kind of just forward of the elevators. It's usually about the location I kind of tried to be in. It's, you know, whenever we're sailing, it tends to work pretty well.
Do you tend to pick a certain deck?
It depends on what kind of stateroom we're getting, really, for the most part. So I do try to go a little bit higher, you know, with the ocean suites. I think, you know, most ships, actually, it doesn't really matter which class it is. They're mostly like on the lower decks, deck 7, 8, somewhere around there.
How about the dining on this 8-night cruise? We'll start at the top at the Lido Deck Marketplace, the buffet. How was it?
It was good. You know, definitely had its traditional, you know, Carnival, you know, marketplace feel and everything. Seemed to have quite a few options throughout. And this was our first sailing where, you know, you served yourself. So a lot of our sailings before, there was someone else doing it for you. But so it's definitely nice kind of getting back to normal experience.
And that ship has the barbecue upstairs, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It has a, you know, not as a guy's, you know, pig and anchor, but very similar in nature. It has a lot of same offerings. And, you know, no matter which class and if it has it on there, I try and hit the barbecue on embarkation day, which is what we did.
Is the little one hooked on barbecue or burgers yet?
Not yet. So he's still trying to figure out his likes and dislikes and all that fun stuff. But later on in one of the ports, he definitely did enjoy a couple burgers at one of the port stops.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the main dining room. What time dining did you have and how was your experience?
We had early dining. So again, you know, traveling with the little guy who likes to go to bed kind of a little bit earlier than the average bear. We chose early dining, which was 6 p.m. for the sailing. And it worked out really well. You know, we were set up at a, you know, just table for four. So it was just us basically, you know, and that was good. The service definitely, you know, was really good. And they're very attentive, made sure that, you know, we had our, you know, fruit plate and milk for the little guy, you know, as soon as we got there. And so that way it kind of entertained them. And while my wife and I could kind of go through the normal dinner process.
So at the risk of sounding stupid, but I'm going to ask you this anyways, when you go into the restaurant with your son, he's almost 2 years old. Are you ordering him food off the main dining room menu or using the kids' menu?
It's really up to you on what you do. So we'd previously sailed with him on Royal Caribbean, and they had like a set, you know, kids' menu. So we asked the wait staff when we sat down on the first night and said, hey, do you have a kids' menu? And they actually said no, that they didn't. But then he rattled off the handful of, you know, kids' staples, you know, pasta and hamburger and pizza and things like that. And so we did that for a couple of nights, but then also sometimes ordered just off the regular adult menu and just, you know, let him eat what he wanted to eat. He's a big pasta fan overall. And so usually dinners for him consisted of, you know, one of the fruit plates, which I think is actually on the adult dessert menu, and, you know, one of the pasta dishes, whether it be from the kids menu or, you know, there's always a pasta dish on the regular menu.
How was your experience at the pizza place, Pizzeria del Capitano, I believe it's called, on that ship? When I was on board on a sister ship a couple of months back, it was kind of a hot mess back there. Like, you order a pizza and have to wait 10 minutes where they used to have all these pies ready to go. I wasn't sure if it was a staffing shortage or them just being mindful of waste.
Yeah, no, that was definitely true on this one. You know, the line was extremely slow, especially during the peak time. So, you know, normal meal hours and after shows, things like that. I will say the best pizza that we did have that was, you know, fairly well cooked and everything was, there was one night that our son was having a tough time sleeping. And so we ended up doing a late night walk around the ship just to try and get him to go to sleep. And we hit up the pizzeria at like 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning when it was dead as a doorknob. And that was probably one of the best pizzas we've ever had on a cruise ship because it was prepared just that right then and no rush. And, you know, that was really good service then.
Yeah, probably a tip for any cruise line, too, is like you want to pay attention to what time the comedy show or the theater show gets out, because that's when people flood the pizza place.
Oh, for sure.
Outside of the main dining room, did you hit any specialty restaurants?
So the only true specialty restaurant that we tried, you know, besides like any like the burgers and, you know, the other complimentary items, is we did try the Seafood Shack for the first time. So I'd never done that on any of our previous sailings and really wanted to try it. And we had some pretty good amount of onboard credit. So I was like, yeah, let's give it a whirl. And I'll say it was a really fun experience. I mean, the food is pretty pricey, I'd say, overall, but you know, you can get some really good quality, you know, boiled shrimp and things like that there. So we tried shrimp and some of the snow crab legs, and they both were really, really good.
How was the entertainment for this 8-night sailing?
The entertainment was good. So we, you know, with the little guy, we weren't able to catch a lot of the shows, but the shows we saw and the music that was kind of around the ship was really, really good. I mean, they had the, you know, the celestial string, you know, in the atrium pretty much every night, and then a lot of different bands throughout the ship, and those all were really good.
How was the Lido deck at night?
You know, it was really nice, you know, to kind of see they often had, you know, movie every night, you know, movie or two every night. It was very nice and relaxing to walk around up there.
Yeah, you can't beat a good sunrise or sunset at sea.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, you know, and obviously, you know, we get to catch both of those sometimes, you know, depending upon how the day's going. But yeah, sure. Good sunset in particular at sea, wonderful.
With the Sea Days, you had three of them on this 8-night cruise, and Carnival has upped the capacity a little bit on their ship. So how were the Sea Days as far as crowds and congestion?
The Sea Days were not too bad. So this sailing, I think they told us, was probably, you know, that 70 to 80%. It was pretty good. You know, you usually could find a deck chair if you wanted to. You know, there's the usual choke points, you know, right around the pool, between the pool and the buffet, I guess you could say, you know, where there's the burger place and Blue Iguana leading into the buffet. And that area usually super crowded. But, you know, if you went up on the second deck, which I think was at deck 11, 10 or 11 on the Freedom, it's pretty nice. You can usually walk around there really well. And the nice thing about the Freedom as well is on this particular ship, the walking track or running track is actually another deck up. So it's actually completely separate from all the pool traffic. So if you wanted to go up there and walk around or run or whatever you wanted to do, it was pretty easy to do that.
Also enjoy on Freedom, on that whole Conquest class, the very front of the ship, you have those three decks where you can actually go outside. And not a lot of people know about those decks.
No, they don't. And so you can really get some nice views around the ship and views of, you know, kind of where you're going. That, yeah, like you said, a lot of people don't know about those secret hiding spots.
Yeah, it's a good sail away spot for sure. So on this sailing, you had four ports of call, as we mentioned earlier, Half Moon, Grand Turk, Aruba, and Bonaire. So we'll start at Half Moon. How was your day there?
It was okay. So this is our first time there. And so we purchased the clamshells, I think it's called. So it's kind of like a, you know, tent that kind of goes half over you, and you have two chairs, basically. The one thing that we had a hard time doing was we had a hard time finding where we were supposed to go, you know, for those. And so luckily we kind of studied the map a couple times, you know, as we're walking along the shore to find where to check in to make sure we don't take over someone's spot or whatever it may be. It was also kind of a cloudy day that day. So a big front had pushed through. And so it had made our seas extremely rough, actually, for like the first half of the sailing too. Mm-hmm. But that day was kind of cool and overcast. Luckily we didn't have any rain though.
Next up was Grand Turk. How was your day?
Grand Turk was great. So we rented a cabana. I think it was called like the Bajari Beach Cabana for the day. And so they pick you up in a bus and kind of take you over to like a resort area or, kind of just a secluded area. And there's beach chairs you can go to, but, you know, behind those a little bit away from the water, but it's very walkable as a couple of beach cabanas. And that was really nice. So we had a really good time and it was a beautiful day there to enjoy Grand Turk.
Were you all the only ship in port?
You know, I think we were. Yeah, we were the only ship in port that day.
Up next, you hit two of the three ABC islands. So how was Aruba?
Yeah, Aruba, we also did a beach resort there. I think it was called La Palms Beach Resort. And that was really nice. So they take you over via a bus to like just a small boat, you know, to like a boat dock. And then you take a boat to the actual resort. And so it's somewhere kind of a little bit, I don't know if it's its own, I don't remember if it's its own island or just another part of Aruba. But it was really nice. I mean, there was, you know, a lot of spots to kind of hang out at, you know, with beach umbrellas, and they provide a nice lunch and, you know, a couple of different activities for kids and so forth. And the beach itself was pretty nice. We did get some rain that day, but it definitely didn't dampen the day at all. Really highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's I think it's called like Deep Palm Island, I believe. Off the coast of Aruba. So it is its private island. That's the place with the open bar and everything, correct?
Yep, for sure. It was really a fun experience.
And then your last port was Bonaire. How'd you spend your day there?
That was really cool. So we had it was our first time to Bonaire, and couldn't find much, you know, kid friendly activities for the most part. Just kind of thinking of like what his attention span would be. But we did try out they have a little train that you can kind of go around, and it's kind of one of those, you know, makeshift train / car vehicle things that kind of tours around Bonaire. And so, yeah, that was kind of cool to get to see some of the different parts of that island. I mean, it's obviously pretty small in nature. I know a lot of people, I think, rent golf carts and so forth to go around, but we were looking for something that's kind of low key on that day. And on our way back, we were able to walk around the port area. They don't have like a true dedicated port area, but they have a good shopping street that's like one street up from the port. And that was when we were there, it was fairly just after they had changed the rules and regulations that before, if you had an unvaccinated kid, you pretty much had to do the excursion and come straight back and, you know, don't pass go kind of thing, you know, but they were starting to lighten that up a little bit. So it was fun to get to walk around with him, unlike our previous cruises where we couldn't do that.
See, that's the only island I haven't been to. So how would you describe this island? Because like in Grand Turk, you can also rent a golf cart and drive around. Or is it more like neighboring island Aruba?
I would think it's kind of similar to Grand Turk in a way. So it's Grand Turk, you know, you get off and there's, you know, that built up, you know, all the shops and stuff. Carnival built that, didn't they? Like that cruise port basically, or where this area is definitely, you can tell is more industrial, not as built up. You're kind of like just thrown right into the city. I'd almost consider it very similar to Ensenada. I don't know if you've ever been to Ensenada or not, but probably very similar to that overall.
You leave the island and you start heading towards Florida. You have 2 sea days. How was the smoke in and around the casino?
That Conquest class, yeah, there's a walkway outside of the casino, but it's pretty wide open. I'd say walking alongside it there, you didn't smell the smoke too bad. But the area that was probably, you know, pretty bad as far as the smoke was, there's the midship elevator bank that is at one of the ends of the casino, basically. And that area, as soon as you get off to that deck, I mean, you get hit in the face pretty hard with with the smoke. So it's pretty bad there. But I'd say overall, walking by it, yeah, you could smell a little bit, but not, it wasn't intolerable.
How was the debark process at Miami? Sometimes they're using the facial recognition and sometimes they're using an agent actually checking your passport.
They were using in that terminal, I don't know if the facial recognition wasn't working or not, because I know I've arrived in Miami and they were doing the facial recognition. Mm-hmm. This one was that there was just a customs guy or gal that was just kind of looking at your passport as soon as you got down the escalator or elevator into the baggage claim area. And so they would look at your passport and then, you know, good to go and move along. And my son actually, he got a passport when he was 6 months old. So it was, you know, we didn't have to go in the birth certificate line or anything. We try to get one pretty early, but I thought it was interesting that they changed it where they do it right then. And then you collect your bag and then you just leave. Like there was no one really checking after that. So I guess that was more efficient, but it really did not take very long for the most part. Once you got off the ship, the debarkation process though, kind of was going, I think, behind schedule that day or really slow. I think with the increased capacity, they were still trying to work out some of their kinks. So we had a Carnival tour that day because our flight wasn't until late in the day on that Sunday. And so we decided to do the South Beach, like I think they call it the South Beach experience, where they kind of give you a short Miami city tour on the way to South Beach. And then they kind of drop you off there for a couple of hours to explore. And then they'll take you to the airport afterwards. And our meeting time was, I think it was either 7:30 or 8 a.m. But we didn't actually depart from the theater where they had our meeting point till about 8:30. So it seemed like it was kind of rolling a little slow that day. Gotcha. But once you were called and got off the ship, it was very, very smooth.
Do you have any first time tips with the cruise or even traveling with a toddler? This is his fourth cruise and he's not even 2 years old yet. So a lucky dude there.
Yeah. So traveling with a toddler, and we've definitely gotten to figure out like what works best and what doesn't. I think some of the old adage says, you know, bring about like 50% more items than you think you need, and, you know, whether it be clothing or whether it be, you know, diapers, things like that. That's very important because you know, on a ship or even some of the ports, like you have no idea like what you're going to be able to come across. You know, if you run out, I mean, that can be really bad news overall. The other thing too is know that the ships do offer laundry service. So take advantage of that, you know, if you need to, you know, especially when it comes to packing. Also, you know, bring toys and things. You know, Carnival, I don't think they let you loan out any toys. And right now the kids clubs aren't even available for my son at his age. And so I don't even know if they even offer that kind of service or that kind of opportunity, where I know that World Caribbean does. They actually let you check out toys from like the nursery and so forth, which is a really cool situation. But make sure you bring some items to kind of entertain them both in your stateroom and even at dinner if you want to have an enjoyable dinner experience, because a young person's attention span can change very, very quickly on you.
Yep.
To have multiple things in the diaper bag when you're pulling around. But yeah, I mean, as far as like the ship itself, I mean, it's a really good ship. I mean, it's a decent size, but it still gives you that old time, you know, smaller ship experience. And it's a great option to consider.
Kevin, going back to the main dining room for a minute here, you said there were 3 sea days. Does that mean there were 3 different Sea Day brunches on your sailing?
I believe there is. We didn't go to the Sea Day brunch at all. But if I recall, I think they did have them on each of the three sea days.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise?
Just again, I mean, enjoying the family time. I mean, we built some really cool memories, getting some really fun shore excursions with good beach days and just building those great family memories and, you know, enjoying the warm weather because it still can be kind of chilly in the Pacific Northwest, even in May, June, July.
What's the elevation where you live?
2,500 feet. So okay. not too bad, but yeah. You can wear jackets into June. It's gotcha. Not uncommon.
Yeah. Well, in closing, your final thoughts of Carnival Freedom?
Well, look forward to a fun experience and, it's a great ship, and it'll be a great time.
Been talking with Kevin about his 8-night Carnival Freedom sailing. Thank you so much for sharing this review.
No, good talking to you too, Doug. Have a great day.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy.
Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer,